Welcome to the Michael U Podcast. We have a special guest today. Her name is Madison Corday. She is our 2017 Rookie of the Year at Open Realty. We're really excited to have her today to be our special guest. Maddie, hello.
This is such an honor. I've been waiting for this moment for weeks.
Well, we're really excited to have you. And Maddie is such a ray of sunshine in our office. And very thankful to have you today to kind of share some of your thoughts and your experiences in business and in life. And so thank you for being here today.
My pleasure.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, like where you come from? And
I am a born and raised Vancouverite.
Oh, wow.
So I've lived here my whole life. Not very exciting, but good in this business. I grew up with two older brothers, so as you know, I can take a joke and have a very good sense of humor. I can dish it out, I can take it.
Yeah.
I went to school for business. My dad owns a commercial real estate investment and management company, so I got started doing that side of things, and then obviously the next logical step was residential. I just kind of felt like commercial was lacking a bit of the relationship building and the people and social that I kind of craved. It was more of a numbers game and an old boys club, and I enjoyed it, but it was very little methodological, where I was lacking a little more of the excitement factors, so I decided to take the leap.
Oh, that's great. So obviously growing up with two older brothers, did they influence you a lot?
They definitely taught me how to take a joke, as I've said, but
so like thick skin.
They're both athletic, so I obviously got into a lot of sports with them.
Okay,
so that's obviously where my big golf career came from as well.
Yeah.
Definitely influenced me in that.
Madison's a burgeoning golf professional. Yeah.
The female Tiger Woods.
She's that's right. She's the female Tiger Woods.
Co-member of the Oakland Golf Club.
The Oakland Golf Club is like, it has so many members.
Yeah, just three. It's very exclusive. We don't want any more members currently. Right. There's a wait list, but
But you guys are just going to haze
them. You can
them
see us, see us at the local public driving range.
Nice. So obviously, you know, growing up playing sports, do you think that helped you in your business? Like, what do you think you learned from, like, what sports did you play growing up?
I always played soccer and softball. So I played that competitively till I was about 18, 19.
Wow.
So I think also, obviously working on a team now, you learn how to get along with other people, how to take direction and give direction, things like that. So I think that definitely helped me currently, obviously, as I do work with other people. So
yeah, so tell us a little bit about that. So you got started a little bit differently than some of the other guests we've had. So why don't you tell us how you got started in real estate and...
First meeting was with Morgan, and I was kind of a little lost if I wanted to be a licensed assistant, if I wanted to be a buyer's agent, if I wanted to be on my own. And I kind of thought the licensed assistant route was the way I wanted to be, and actually after talking to Morgan, she was like, no, I don't see this for you at all. She's like, this makes sense for you. And after like a couple minutes, I was like, no, you're totally right. And she kind of gave me a list of people in the office who were looking to expand their teams or looking to hire. And I knew a couple people in the office, and I kind of passed around this list to them, and they all pointed me to Lee, and then Lee and I met, and I fooled him enough to hire me, and the rest was history.
Okay, so you got started, and you didn't really have a clear
direction
when you got started. Mm-hmm. So in those moments where you didn't have clarity, what was your process? Obviously, you spoke to, so Morgan is our partner here at Oakland, one of our business partners, so... So you spoke with Morgan. What else did you do? Did you talk to your parents?
I talked to other people who I knew in the business, and I got a lot of mixed feedback. Everyone was kind of pushing me to go off by my own and start on my own, and I am a very independent person, but I also enjoy the camaraderie and the support of being in a team environment, especially when you're doing something that you're not super comfortable with, you've never really done before. So I can obviously appreciate the aspects of working on your own and having that flexibility and that time to make your own schedule and do things how you exactly want to do them. But I decided on my own especially for my first year, that I wanted to be working under someone and learn, because I learned best through experience, not someone telling me what to do,
right,
or a book or podcast or anything. I like to learn through experience, so I thought that was the best way to do it. And after that, it was clearly it was the right choice, so I'm very happy with the decision I made. And
so you're a buyer's agent.
Yes.
Working in a very, very busy team.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you give us kind of the dimensions and the parameters of your role and how that serves the team? And maybe like just even before that, so Maddie works on Lee Bryant's team, which is one of our top producing realtors here at Oakwood Realty, and he's actually one of the top producing realtors and top producing teams in all of Greater Vancouver. He won what we call the President's Club, which is a top 1% real estate agent in Vancouver. So we're really proud of Lee. He's a fantastic... Like, when I said fantastic, Maddie had like a facial expression.
Don't overdo it.
Disdain. He's a fantastic real estate agent here in our office. He's produced really great results over, I think, a 10-year career in real estate. And obviously, Maddie was brought aboard to work with buyers on the team. And also, so why don't you just share with us a little bit about your role in the team?
Yeah, I think at the start, it was more to take on all buyers and do all the touring, do all the contracts, do all the showings. And then it kind of eventually developed into the listing side as well too. So I now kind of, I run all the open houses, I do all the showings for our listings, I take on all the buyers, so I handle the negotiations on the buy side as well as the list side sometimes when Lee needs me to step in. But he's kept me very busy, as you know.
Right.
So it was basically the fast track in my first year. I was able to see the amount of transactions and do the amount of paperwork that most people see in probably about 10 years. So it
How many transactions did you guys do last year?
I think it was like 100, as a team, I think we were like over 150.
150 sales. So just let me put a little bit of that into context. So the average real estate agent in Greater Vancouver does 4 transactions a year. If we have 14,000 realtors at a certain number of sales total in the MLS, so the multiple listing service, is what we use to track all of the sales in real estate, most of the sales in real estate. So the average agent will do 4, maybe 4.5 to 5 sales a year. And Madison and her team, Lee and the rest of them, did 150. So that is that's a lot. And so obviously doing that volume of sales, tell us a little bit about that experience that you, like last year.
A lot less sleep.
Right.
A lot more stress. But you kind of get to see every different aspect of things, because over 150 sales, you see all different types of clients, you get all different types of experience, good and bad. So you, in that 150, you've kind of experienced anything that could go wrong or anything that could go right. You're a lot more familiar with how to handle situations when you've been through that once or twice already. So obviously in 4 or 5 deals, most things will go right, majority of the time. So I think obviously between 150, you see different types of properties, you see everything kind of under the sun. So it it definitely helps you learn from 0 to 100.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of teaches you to be efficient, be more organized,
right?
Because obviously if you have 4 clients a year, you have a lot more time to be a little more focused on each person, to customize things, where you have to learn to be efficient when you're handling so many things at once. So it kind of, you create a better process for yourself, you stay on top of things, and you learn how to kind of fly by the seat of your pants as well as you possibly can, but it
right.
makes you a better person for it, that's for sure.
So what are some of the tips that you have for efficiencies in a real estate business? So if you were to say, like, these are the top 2 things that you can implement in anyone's business to make it more efficient, what would they be?
I'm old school, I like paper.
Okay.
So I have a notebook where I keep all my files in, so I have to-do lists for each day, I cross everything off, because I think the actual process of crossing things off, you know exactly what you have done that day, you know exactly what you need to do, so you can kind of plan your day and say, okay, I have to get X, Y, and Z done today. Do I have time? When do I have time? And when am I going to do it? So that's a big thing for me, is just a simple to-do list and knowing exactly when I have free time and when I can accomplish these things, and also not calling it a day until all those things are done and leaving it.
Right.
It's trying not to procrastinate.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also have files on, like, what I've shown clients, what their feedback has been, so that when the right property comes up, I know exactly, okay, well, they saw this one in the building a couple months ago, this is what they thought of it, is this the perfect unit? If it is, then I'm on it right away, and I know exactly what we've experienced together and what their thoughts were on that, and just keeping track of everything we've talked about, everything we've been through, so you know, have I been through financing with them? Have I contacted their mortgage broker? Do I know exactly what they're pre-approved for? So just keeping everyone in order is the easiest way. I do obviously use online things as well too, but I find the actual art of having it in paper
mm-hmm.
in front of you just makes it a lot easier to go through. You just can't lose that notebook, but
yeah.
I try and take pictures of everything as well too, so I have backup files. And then just, we have a team drive that we do that has every contract we've ever written. It has all the paperwork in it, so you can kind of go through with, you're looking back at a client from 2 years ago, you have everything right there labeled from A to Z on all their documents, any offers that they wrote that didn't go through, obviously what they got an accepted offer on, and just easy to go back that way and search them up.
So also, obviously Maddie is talking about having a really solid to-do list in the morning where she's writing down all the tasks, and it's kind of, it's, would you say it's a running list throughout the day?
I usually wake up in the middle of the night and I think, okay, I have to do this tomorrow, and then I'll type it into cold my calendar. Sweat. Yeah, I have a to-do list app as well too, so okay. I'll wake up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night and say, okay, yeah. I need to do this tomorrow. I add it there, and then I'll, in the morning when I sit down at my desk, then I write that back in as well too, but it's so, usually a middle of the night thing where I have a little panic. And
yeah, so a night panic and
it's very
and
common.
A cold sweat.
Yep.
And then she, like, lights a candle.
Yeah. Some sage.
Yeah. And then writes what she needs to do. So one is that, and also being highly organized in your filing system. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's really interesting because there is this huge pull for people to implement technology in their business, especially in their filing in an organization.
Yes.
And so what you guys use a real simple paper system and then a very simplified system that your team can access. Now, have you guys thought about implementing more technology?
We actually talked about it yesterday. There's an app called Evernote.
Mm-hmm.
And so actually Pete brought up this idea. And it was this app that you can basically, for each property, you have a different file. And everyone on the team can access it. So if I showed it yesterday, I added to the file that I showed it. This is who I showed it to. This is what their feedback was. You have all the information on the property, so you have basically the normal stats on what's the contingency fund, what the bylaws are, anything specific about the unit, so when whoever goes to show it can just access this file quickly on their phone, open it up, and they know everything they need to know. So that was actually a pretty good idea, so we're going to start using that, I think.
Oh, wow, that's great. So obviously always improving, especially as you gain better efficiency in the team.
Exactly.
So, you know, you start with being a buyer's agent. You have those responsibilities to meet the clients. And in terms of working with a buyer, so in the real estate business, being a real estate agent, working with a buyer, how do you qualify them? How do you understand their needs better? Is there a certain system that you guys use? Or
I think to qualify them, the most important thing I find is to have a conversation with their mortgage broker.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very lucky that a lot of our clients all use the same mortgage broker. So Lauren Francis from Scotiabank, we'll give her a shout out.
Okay, Lauren from Scotiabank, yeah.
So it's great to have a good relationship with a mortgage broker because then I can know exactly directly, have they been pre-approved? What are they approved for? Because a lot of people get confused on what they think they're approved for and what they can actually afford. And so if you start taking a client out to see million-dollar properties because they think they're approved for $1 million and they're actually can afford 700, it's very hard to go back on that. So once you've seen a couple million-dollar properties, now you're going down to 700,000. It's exactly. It's very hard to compare to those. So I always find getting that done out of the way before people actually see things is very important because I have had that before, and it's not an easy one to come back from. So that's basically the first qualifier to know that they're serious, is they've got their pre-approval done, have that conversation with the mortgage broker, get that out of the way. And then right away, I like to actually just start seeing things with them, and I'll take them to a variety of different places just because I find once you know what someone doesn't like, it's very easy to figure out what they do like.
Mm-hmm.
So people will see a lot of places and say, oh yeah, I like this, I like that. But until you hear, like, absolutely not, it's very hard to set those parameters. So I'll take them out on their first tour to see a bunch of places, very different from each other, narrow it down. And then from there, it's very easy to make that call when the perfect property comes out that it's exactly right for them, and say we're going to see it tonight.
Mm-hmm. So obviously, to reiterate, getting them pre-approved, and what, you know, when we see these tasks, there's always a seed that, like, that task emanates from. And something that I've learned from Maddie and from observing their team is that Maddie's very direct. She's extremely direct. I think a lot of agents, especially new agents, when they come out of the gate, they're not very direct. They're are
cautious.
Yeah, cautious, yeah. Of how they ask certain questions, like, have you been, like,
oh, totally. It's an awkward
yeah.
conversation to have because you're essentially kind of asking someone, like, how much money do you make, which is like the worst question
right.
ever ask someone, but it's obviously a beat around the bush way of saying it, but it's obviously an important discussion to have when you're obviously spending your time with someone. And the more time you spend with someone, if they're not pre-approved and you're just wasting your time, you're wasting their time. So it is obviously important for everyone to get that out of the way and make sure that that's locked up before you obviously start spending your time and effort into taking them out and selling the properties.
Yeah, I think being direct and having those conversations early on,
mm-hmm.
doing 150 sales a year, having that kind of efficiency you require that directness. And I think that that is something that we see as a trend in all of the top producing agents, all the top producing teams, is that the members of the team are very direct. They're, you know, and not kind of, they're assertive, not aggressive.
In a sense.
And you know, and that's one thing. And a second is physically taking them to properties, because obviously with all the technology that's in place, a lot of people just want to see things online. What are your thoughts about that?
Oh, I've had so many people where they didn't want to see it in person. And I'm like, no, trust me. You need to go see this. We'll go see it. They thought they hated it from the pictures. They'll see it in person. It's a completely different story. I've also had it the complete opposite, where it looks a lot better in the pictures. You show it in person and it shows crappy, and it's completely different situation. But I find you can't actually, you know, you can't judge a book by its cover, stupid as it is. But until you see a place in person, you really don't get a good feel for it. So when people kind of push back and they don't really want to see it because they don't like, they think there's not enough light in the unit, well,
right. Could
just be a bad photographer. So until you actually go and get a feel for the layout yourself rather than getting a feel for the floor plan, it's very important. But people do push back, for sure.
Yeah. Every girlfriend I've ever has said, don't judge a book by its cover before they introduce me to their friends.
And look how that's turned out.
That's always what they say in every relationship I've ever had. Just don't.
It's a good one to live by.
Yeah. So I think that's very true, having that. And it shows a qualification as well, obviously. If they're willing to spend the time, energy, and resources in going out to view properties, they're likely more serious in purchasing. And I think there's cause and effect with a lot of things, so that's a huge effect. So if they're out there looking, they're genuinely serious about looking. And as you know, how many times you meet someone and you feel like they're super ready to go, and then it doesn't turn out.
No, and then they ghost you, and you never hear from them again.
Sure. So would you say, just using your intuition, so let's say you do one sale, how many prospects do you need to do one sale?
We're different because a lot of our business is so referral-based.
Right.
So we don't do a ton of prospecting, per se. Mm-hmm. So a lot of it is just someone's happy, they refer their friend who refers another friend. But say for prospecting, kind of about every 4 or 5, I'd say.
Yeah. So that's a very high average in cold business. Like in my business, maybe 1 out of 8 or 10 clients, because we don't know them, we don't have a pre-existing relationship. So that just gives us a little bit of numbers as we kind of factor through things. So what do you think was the biggest lesson that you learned last year in 2017, personally or professionally?
I think not doubting myself. Because I think that's, especially in your first year or so, that's something you think you don't know what you're doing, or you think that you need someone else to tell you that what you're doing is right. So I think just trusting yourself, and obviously when you trust yourself, you come off a lot more confident as well too, because it's a big thing to, when obviously people are trusting you with their life savings, they want to know that you're confident and you feel competent in what you're doing. So I think ever having that sense of self-doubt just gives people the wrong impression, per se. So I think just always trusting myself and trusting my gut and believing in my opinion was a big thing for me, because I think once I kind of knocked that out of my head, it definitely translated a lot more into my business as well too. Because obviously I work for someone who has done this for so long and is very confident in what he does. So I think just taking that from him and believing that I know what I'm talking about and I know what I'm doing, I think that was a big change for me, for sure.
So have you always, like, even before last year, before the year before, is that something you struggled with before, self-doubt and things like
that? Yeah, a bit. I think just, especially like as a woman in a fairly male-dominated industry, it's hard to be assertive and be confident. As experience happens and as you do things that you didn't think you could do, just over time it builds that sense of confidence for me. But it's definitely always been something I've struggled with, per se.
So being a woman in business, was there an intimidation, or was there
especially I started when I was 23, so I was obviously younger and a woman, so I definitely have, even still, I get the awkward conversations where people tell me that they've been in the business longer than I've been alive. So that's always fun. But I basically, it's happened more than once.
Yeah.
That's always an interesting conversation to have, but it doesn't really bother me anymore because they're just making themselves look old, so.
Right. Yeah, I think it's really interesting because people, especially real estate brokers, they tend to be kind of the center of the universe in their own universes.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, they try to kind of go power over the top.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very frustrating being on the other side of that. And,
oh, yeah.
And how we react to these things. I used to take great, great, grave offense. And I wanted to kind of take it to the highest level of, like, of the disciplinary committees and all that stuff. But I found that, you know, that wasn't really, that didn't serve me very well.
No.
So how do you deal with it, Maddie?
I kind of just try to rise above it. I take it as a with a grain of salt and try and just laugh it off, because it does happen all the time where people will, like, phase me out for being young or dumb or this or that and just kind of discount me. And then when they actually get to do visit with me, they're like, oh, actually, she's intelligent and she's
right.
not 12 years old
yeah.
and can handle herself. So I kind of just find by proving people wrong, that's the best way to go
mm-hmm.
about it. And I take great pride in that.
Right.
So
how do you stay motivated? Because I have been working with Maddie now for a couple years, and if I'm not the first person here, Maddie's the first person here. If I'm not the last person here, Maddie's the last person here. And so how do you stay motivated? Like, what drives you?
We set a lot of goals as a team that we always try and achieve, and I always want to pull my weight as a team member. And I think as we get bigger and things like that, that obviously motivates me to do more and do better and always be on top of things. So I think that's a big thing for me, and just personal pride. I'm very competitive
mm-hmm.
in a good way, which I think also from my sports background.
Who do you compete with?
Probably my brothers.
Your brothers? Really?
Yeah. So or even just myself. Like, I always want to do better than I did last year, so
mm-hmm.
obviously you can't get rookie of the year in your third year, but
right.
but just striving for that next level of excellence.
Yeah.
Is always
obviously competing with yourself. But it's really interesting because Maddie grew up with a family of two brothers. I grew up with three sisters and a brother, so the five of us.
Yeah.
And I don't like calling it sibling rivalry, because I love
yeah.
my brothers
oh,
and sisters.
Yeah.
I like love that, you know. My sister Arlene works with me. She's the managing broker of this office, and like, I don't know how many times I am like, I'm her like runty kid brother.
It's pretty hard to compete with Arlene.
It is. And I don't want to call it rivalry, but having that as a comparison, do you compare? Like, do you think you compare? Do you think your parents compare? Maybe.
I think we all do very different things, so it
okay.
makes it easier. My dad and I are probably in the most similar business, but again, he does commercial
right.
and he's not a licensed agent, he just does investment and management, so people always think that I do the same as my dad, so I'm always competing with my dad, but it is very different, which I like to keep it that way. But I think you always have, especially being the baby child, you always want to live up to your older siblings, so I think that was always a big thing for me. And I think people also just not competing with friends, but just people's expectations of you. I always kind of grew up with a lot of friends who didn't necessarily need to work or work that hard, and people
mm-hmm.
always kind of thought the same thing of me. So I've
what
always
do you mean by that?
Just people have been set up. I grew up on the west side of Vancouver, so there's a certain sense of or a certain type of sense of yeah sense of entitlement that is very prevalent. So I always kind of had people who would judge me, and even when I started, just thinking that I wasn't going to work that hard or that I didn't need to work, so I wasn't going to. So I take a lot of pride in myself that I am a hard worker and that I do work for my own money to pay for things myself that I earn. And I think that's a big thing for me as well, just my personal pride is to know
mm-hmm.
that I do work hard even though people think that I wouldn't or don't need to. So I think even when Lee first hired me, he wasn't sure if I was going to be a hard worker or not, and I think just by proving that to him and telling him that's the kind of person I was, he was, as he got to know me more and knew a bit more about my background and things like that, he was very kind of surprised to know that the world I grew up in or the neighborhood I grew up in, things like that, and
mm-hmm.
that I turned out to be a hard worker and that.
So do you think that's in the DNA, or do you think that's through life experience?
More so life experience. My dad is the hardest working person I've ever met in my life. He's gone like 67 now, and he works every single day. He doesn't take a holiday. His exercise schedule is ridiculous. He wakes up at 5 o'clock every morning without an alarm. He goes to work all day, gets home, has set up a little gym in the basement, and goes home and sits on his spin bike and watches TV, and then goes to bed and does it all over again. So I think growing up around that type of person was obviously sets you up to be a certain way. So I've always been on a schedule. I've always been motivated to do things and not sit on the couch and watch TV. So I think growing up with parents that way who are very hard workers kind of creates that into your DNA, because I think obviously if you grow up and you're handed everything and you don't necessarily have to work, obviously it's very easy not to, but I think growing up with parents who wouldn't have put up with that, we'll say, definitely forced me to be a
very disciplined upbringing.
Not per se. Like, there was definitely people, like, the joke was always that I didn't need to work, but I always say if I was sitting on the couch watching TV, my dad would not have been happy, and I would have been out of the house very fast, so right. That would not have been put up with. But I was always, I could work at Starbucks or McDonald's, I could be the top producing lawyer in the city, and they wouldn't care. It's just that I'm putting my hours into something and working and mm-hmm. doing something that I care about.
So did you go right from school to real estate, or did you have other jobs? Or
I worked at a spin studio while I was in school.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that through college and university. So I ran the front desk there, and I was the studio manager. And then I also taught spin class as mm-hmm. well, too. So I did that to pass my time while I was in school, and then I went straight from graduating to real estate.
So the last podcast we had was with Jeff Appleby, who is... an awesome member of The Office, and Maddie treats him like a piñata.
So he's the older brother, yeah. I never wanted.
Yeah, exactly. So Maddie's the office bully.
Yeah, according to my birthday cake.
So Jeff had a transitionary real estate business where he was in mining for a long time, transitioned into real estate. Maddie is what we call a career realtor, basically knew that she wanted to get into it while she was in school. Similar to myself and to Morgan, we're career realtors, so we started just basically right out of the gate, right out of school, to get into the real estate business. So where was the seed planted? Where, when, at what age and what point in your life did you know that you wanted to do real estate?
Pretty early on. It was always something that was talked about because that is my family business. So right. My dad and my uncle do that together. My cousin kind of took over for my uncle. And so it was always kind of talked about that I would be the one to take over for my dad. But I said, my dad will probably never retire, so I don't have to worry about that for a very long time. But it was always something in the back of my head. But I knew that I enjoyed building relationships with people and things like that. But everyone always kind of thought I would be a lawyer because I like to argue so much, as you know. So that was always, it was kind of always between those two. And then as I got further into school, I realized that was something I was more passionate about. And I worked with my dad in the commercial side for a bit and got that experience, which I obviously think benefited me, but it kind of made it a lot more clear what I wanted to do. And that was when the residential came about and went from there.
Awesome. So in everything in life, there's changes. And in your team, there's been some changes as well. You guys had a huge increase of sales, so you required more staff and more people to be put in. And so how do you guys embrace the changes that you guys have had on your team? What have you found to be really effective strategies when change kind of comes?
I think the big thing for us is we're all friends. So it's obviously hard to separate business and friendship, but I think we're different than a lot of teams as we hang out in our free time and we all joke around and have fun together. So it makes it a lot easier when you bring in new people to have that same relationship and embrace it rather than look at it as a negative change or a threat or anything like that. So I think always having that foundation of friendship, and we obviously do bicker and fight all the time, but it's always in fun. So I think just working that way has made it a lot easier as people come in and people leave and things like that. So
where do you think that comes from? So do you think that's like a core value of your team? Do you guys have core values, or do you guys have your own?
Not like, really. We're all very different, but we're all very similar. We all have the same sense of humor. We all know how to take a joke. We're all very motivated and driven. We all kind of like the same things. So we have a lot of differences, but when it comes down to it, we're very similar people. And always just looking for that same type of person who has something a little different than you that they can contribute. But when it comes down to it, you care about the same things. You obviously have good ethics and morals, and you want to work hard.
So if you had a piece of advice for somebody that is joining a team, going to be a buyer's agent, going to be a licensed assistant, or joining a established real estate team, what would be two or three pieces of advice you'd give to them?
I think just be open to working hard right off the bat. And I think that's the biggest thing you can do when you come in to a group of people, is just show that you care and you want to work hard. And sometimes you have to put other people before yourself when it comes down to maybe missing the Friday night dinner so you can do a showing, but making moves like that just shows that you're a team player and makes people a lot more receptive to you. So just showing that you're able to help out, you're able to share, and you want to do this and want to work hard and are committed. I think that's a big thing that we've kind of seen even for myself or for other people coming in. And I think always being direct on how you feel. So if you come in and things are done a little differently than you're used to or that you'd like, sharing that opinion and saying, well, this is how I've normally done things. What do you think about this? And then just kind of learning to adapt from there and just always being open. Because I think if things happen and you let them fester, or you're not really happy with how things are going or how things are run, if you just kind of let that slide, it creates a bigger problem. So I think always being direct in how you feel and how you're struggling a bit with something, asking for help, right. Not just trying to stay in your own lane and be scared to be vocal. I think being open and vocal is kind of the best thing you can do in a team environment for sure.
That's great. Really having a heart to contribute right away.
Yeah.
But working hard and prioritizing things above yourself in many cases. So selflessness, and then being direct and being open. Something that I've noticed just from the outside looking in is Maddie is very grateful for the opportunity to work in the team, as opposed to feeling taken advantage of. So what we find in a lot of cases is some teams, and maybe it has a lot to do with the leadership of the team or a variety of different factors, a lot of people feel like they're being, it's strange, they're being taken advantage of in their team versus, no, I'm grateful to be part of this team and I'm better for it. So, and that's the attitude that Maddie has always had. I've seen her, we did a showing together at like 10.
I do remember that.
And stuff like that has happened.
I think you just kind of have to chalk it up to the more you're getting to do, the more experience you're getting, and you're bettering yourself. So looking at it that way rather than thinking that you're being taken advantage of per se is... You're getting the opportunity to be in front of so many clients. You're getting the opportunity to learn so many different transactions that it's bettering yourself, but bettering everyone else.
Yeah, totally. And I think life is how we react to certain situations, not really and how we respond. And I think since Maddie just embraces and is thankful for a lot of the different things that kind of come in front of her, as opposed to it being like, I'm being taken advantage of. I'm going to take you to the workers' compensation board. No humans.
Threaten that all the time, like, but
stop putting me in a cage. I think it's really great to see, especially from a young person. So do you think there's a ring of truth, or do you think it's just almost a ism? Like, everyone talks about like millennials, because Maddie is like in the millennial crew. She's, you know, in her mid-20s. They have a really bad rap.
Yeah, I know.
Right? Like, you guys have a bad rap. So, like, how does that affect you? Do you think it's true? One, do you think it's true?
Yeah.
Two, is how does that affect you one way or the other?
I think for every bunch, there's always a couple of bad apples. So I think definitely I've seen both sides of it. I've seen people my age who are completely opposite. I've seen people who fit the bill completely. So I think there is a lot of, obviously, entitlement and lack of wanting to work for what you have. But there's also a lot of people who completely prove that wrong and are super determined, super motivated, and work their butts off that are in that same age bracket. So I think kind of any stereotype, there's people who fit the bill, there's people who don't. So I think it's just about knowing yourself and not straying from that to be the norm.
Well, that must be tough, though, you know, impressionable, being young. Especially now in an environment where everyone is just showing their best side only.
Yeah.
And there's no downside to anything with social media and how it's portraying life and your digital life versus your real life.
I think you get judged right away for being young, especially in this industry. But I think, obviously, working for someone who's a lot more established, they obviously trust him. And as they meet me and get to know me, any preconceived notions they may have had of me go away. So I try and prove people wrong through my work ethic and response time and always being on top of things. And I think just proving to them that I'm not a typical millennial and right. That I do care about what I do and that I do work hard, I think that's the best way to get around that.
So when you first got started, did you try to be more mature, or what was
that? Well, I apparently fooled Lee when he hired me because he thought I was 27. He clearly did not read my resume because it's very clear in there that I was 23. But he was my age when he started as well too, which is right. The funny thing. So we were both 23. But I probably tried to come off a little more mature, a little less silly. But now I'm definitely a lot more true to who I am, and I do joke around with my clients, and I think they appreciate that. But obviously, knowing to be serious when you have to be serious, and knowing when to crack a joke or throw a smile out when you feel the time is right. So just kind of finding that balance of being mature and being silly and not overloading on either side. But obviously, when I'm in the office, I may be a little more silly than I am with clients. But I think just being myself has been a big thing for me, and I find it attracts the same type of clients. I get a lot of clients who have the same sense of humor as me, and we get along super well, and we'll end up being friends after the transaction, and we still hang out to this day. So I think just being true to yourself, it brings those kind of people around you, and someone doesn't think I'm mature enough, I prove them wrong in the end. And
you know, because there's such a huge pull to, you know, when you're young, to be something that you're not. And it was really interesting. When I first got started, I tried to transform myself. I was like, wore like a suit every day, wore my dad's shoes. And like, I used to try to
drop your voice
deeply. Then I, and it was weird because I was practicing all the time and how to be more mature. I was wearing like glasses.
Yeah, I do bring my glasses out sometimes when I feel I need to.
Yeah.
And also dyeing my hair from blonde to brown was a big transition as well too for the, right. I got sick of the dumb blonde jokes from Lee, so I decided to dye my hair back to brown, and
yeah.
That definitely brought up my maturity of it.
There you go. So, you know, it's really interesting because you try to morph to what you think that society wants of you, but you kind of have a rediscovery to be back to who you actually
exactly.
are. And it's a great evolution, and especially when you get started, feel like this tendency, I got to be someone that I'm not.
Yeah.
But you can run a really amazing, successful business being exactly who you are.
I find just everyone, even in the office, like, they all have their different type of clients that they attract because they're that type of person. And I find it funny a lot of times when I'll go to showings with people with different agents that I know, and their clients come in and they suit them to a T, because it's the type of person you are. You attract a similar type of person. You get along with similar type of person. So
right.
You end up having a client relationship with that person, obviously. So I do find that entertaining a lot. It's like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Or someone will come through an open house and they're, oh, my realtor is so-and-so. And that definitely makes sense. So.
Of course. If they're wearing orthopedic shoes, they know it's like Michael's client.
I get along great with my first couple of clients were all older, like a lot older than me. But
yeah, that's great. So what's been your experience now? Obviously, well, you haven't had a chance to work in another office, but like being in a community here in our office. You know, I know it's going to be a little biased because
you're speaking
about me. Terrible. Yeah. But, like, how has that experience been, like, from your shoes as a new realtor?
I think just right off the bat, the training was great. Always feeling like you could walk into someone's office and ask them a question and you weren't going to be judged for it was a big thing. And obviously, I had a team to go to, but I think for people that don't, it's a big thing to have the support that they do here, just because there's a lot of things the course doesn't teach you that you need to know. So if you're writing your first contract straight out of the course, you're not going to know what to do. So I think always having an agent that you can go to, or a managing broker, or things like that, that you know is you've got an open dialogue with, and ask for advice, you can ask for help, and know that it's always going to be there. That's kind of invaluable for sure.
Awesome. So what do you see for the future? Like Madison Corday, we're looking in a crystal ball, or we're looking on a mirror on the wall. Who's the prettiest of them all?
Jill, for sure.
Jill is my one of my colleagues on our team. She edits this podcast as well, and she's our like marketing and administrative superstar in our team. And she's actually here. She's looking really tan. She doesn't like to be called pasty.
No.
So if you see her on the streets, tell her how tan she is, and she'll like
glowing.
Like you. She'll love you. And so yeah. So if we were looking at a crystal ball for Madison Corday, what would that look like?
In how long? The next 5 years?
There's, tell me what you think.
I think still doing what I'm doing. People always ask, when are you going to go off on your own? When are you going to leave the team? But I'm very happy where I am. I enjoy the environment I work in. I always feel challenged. So I think doing what I'm doing, and probably being on the PGA Tour as well too. And
yes.
And yeah.
Yeah. So just learning golf, being on the team. Like the team has shifted a little bit. Just recently. So why don't you share a little bit about that? I kind of want to know more about your future as well. Like, you know, yeah, maybe let's talk a little bit more about
Well, according to the psychic, I'm getting married in 7 years.
Okay, you visited a psychic.
Yeah, the same one as Jill.
Okay, so you're getting married in 7 years. What else did the psychic tell you?
He's clean cut, European with an accent. I'm going to have 2 children.
Wow.
At 35, I think she said.
Yeah.
But I will be a career woman still, and someone will be helping me raise my children, so I'll have a nanny, apparently.
Wow.
She got very in-depth.
So you visited a psychic. I want to hear the whole story around that.
Chris and I went to a psychic in, I think it was Port Coquitlam? Yeah, Port Coquitlam.
That's where all the gypsies
some old lady in her basement.
Okay.
Because another guy in our office, Nick, had seen the psychic,
okay.
And she got some like fairly accurate reads on him, so we were curious and decided
right.
to go, so we traveled out there one day and went to her basement, and she did a reading, and she was fairly spot on with something. There's a couple things that...
What was she spot on with?
I think she knew the big thing for me was that I needed to stop doubting myself and be more confident in my decisions, and that was... She read right away. It was, like, one of the first things that came out of her mouth. It was, like... And she was yelling. Mm-hmm. that was a big thing. She knew I was in real estate, and she knew that I worked for someone.
What was her whole thing? Like, did she have, like, how did she read that?
She would just kind of start going off in gibberish nowhere and then just, like, yell something out all of a sudden. And it was alarming. She'd go into her own little world and pull something out. I think she could see spirits as well, too. It was very alarming. But she was fairly accurate.
Wow, okay, so... You saw a psychic, so you already know what's
going on. Yeah, I already know I'm getting married in seven years.
To a European? It's
very easy to cross people off the list when they're not clean cut and European with an accent now. So.
Yeah, for sure. I'm going to blow your mind right now, but, on a couple things. So one is... You have 45 minutes? So one is, you know, in the Asian culture, there's a real big thing with fortune telling.
Yeah.
The big culture around it with, there's a couple different types. There's palm reading,
yep.
There's face reading, there's time of birth, and how it kind of relates to the stars and astrological symbolism behind the time you're born, and it's a very intricate kind of destiny type of things. In a lot of cultures, there's something called like a mandate of heaven, like you have to, there's a lot of stuff. So there's a very, in our culture, in the Chinese culture, there's a huge fortune-telling tradition. And it's funny, when I was a kid, when I was 12 years old, somebody read my fortune. And I didn't know, because I don't speak Chinese, and they said it in Chinese. And I don't know if it's self-fulfilling prophecy or whatever, but like...
It's come true.
Everything.
I need to go to this person.
Yeah, he was in the Philippines. Oh. My mom has a little like cassette recording of him, and it's funny. Like it was.
I'm gonna take a trip there.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. And there was another a person that was in my office back in one of my old real estate offices, who was like a face and a palm reader as well. And he told like everyone like that I had I'm a very lucky person, which I am.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of there's a huge element of luck behind it. It's pretty crazy. So I don't believe in that kind of stuff, but for some reason
clearly it's working.
It's fine, Jen.
Just keep riding it.
Riding the wave. Yeah. You know, and I was talking to Jill about this because so I don't think people give Asian men a chance when they definitely should. Okay.
You talked to Jill about this.
This is a PSA.
To Jill about this, and like it's like, oh, and she's like, I'm just racist and unattractive to them.
Keep that in.
They're too short.
So.
Not Yao Ming.
Yeah, exactly. We can find you Yao Ming.
Yeah. His brother.
Yeah, Yao Ming's brother. So. I don't think people give, like, Asian guys a chance. It is so, like, I don't know what it is. You have this fortune teller, and you're meeting this European
guy. Yeah, she didn't say clean-cut Asian man with an accent. She said clean-cut European.
Wow.
So.
How could you...
Okay. It's her fault. It's her fault.
It's like my rant point.
It has a PSA.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't know if we talked about this when I had Priya on the podcast, but, like, she said that she never thought that she would date like a Chinese guy or an Asian guy. She never
liked charmed her.
Any Asian guys. And she's been telling her friends, you know, her single friends, like, you should try to date an Asian guy. Because everyone, and it was really funny. It was me and Morgan and Sean. Morgan, my business partner, and Sean, her husband, and I were having dinner at my house. And she was talking to Morgan about being in a relationship with an Asian guy. And Pri said to Morgan, like, Asian guys are like Nickelback. She said that everyone makes fun of them.
Yep.
But like when you actually listen to them, they're pretty good.
Yeah.
So kind of like Nickelback.
Makes sense.
So like it was really funny. And so basically, if you're out there, you're a woman listening to this podcast, all two of you,
yep,
it might 50-50
yep.
chance.
Specifically
give
Jill.
Them a chance. You will see, like, a huge, Maddie, give them a chance. Even though the fortune teller told you.
It's not going to fulfill my prophecy. Yeah, he probably won't be my husband, clearly, because
we're
not like that European, but...
Well, we're not in it for a while.
Okay. Right, so. Yeah. Fair enough.
For the most part. That's so that's kind of my rant, so...
Appreciate that.
Yeah, so just to wrap up, is there anything that, like, something that you want to add? One of the points, like, if you were listening to this podcast, if someone from the outside is listening, what do you want them to remember about Maddie?
Oh, God. That I'm not actually mean. I'm a very nice person. I'm not actually the office bully, like okay. You said.
So, the legacy.
The legacy of Madison. I think just, that's a really good question. That I...
If you had like a little saying on your gravestone.
She worked hard and played hard.
Boating.
But she's a very good golfer.
Okay. Maddie, the very good golfer, thank you so much for being on the podcast today, and have a great week, everyone.